If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Friends, welcome to the official Formula One podcast dedicated to answering your questions on Formula One. I'm Katie Osborne, and every week, me and my buddy Christian Hugill are here to explain the sometimes complicated world of F1 to our newer fans. If that's you, then welcome. And also to help those who have been around the sport for a while learn even more. This week, we've sent Christian to Alpine on a special assignment to answer a question from one of our dedicated listeners about wind tunnels.
Yeah, over to Yunus Nasser in Syria, who sent us this question.
So my question is how the FIA control the usage of wind tunnels, since many teams have their own wind tunnel and hypothetically they can use it secretly without no one knowing. So how does the FIA control the tunnel usage?
Solid questions, Yunus. We also had emails on this topic from Petra Desimet and Murtaza Badri. So in this episode, we will explain everything when it comes to wind tunnels, why teams use them, and how the rule makers keep an eye on how those teams use them. Christian has been talking to someone who spends a ton of time working in one.
Oh, a lot of time, trust me. But before we get to that, here are a few things to know about the complex and secretive world of wind tunnels.
They do seem quite secretive, huh?
They're very secretive. In fact, we'll find out how secretive a little bit later. But first, let's picture what they look like. They are long, rectangular rooms with a huge fan at one end. I don't mean like a tall Ferrari supporter, for example.
But that would be cool.
That would be cool. That would be very good. I mean fans with blades like a propeller at one end of the room. Are you with me?
Yeah, that's a great visual, Christian. And in the middle of that rectangular room is a model F1 car, which is fixed. That one doesn't move. I keep thinking of like Lego car or like something small, but I understand it. It's a bit bigger than that, just not quite the real deal.
It's a dinky car.
A dinky car.
That, I think that's the F1 technical term.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. To simulate high speeds, the fan spins and blows air across the model car, which is covered in sensors to measure just how that air behaves. And underneath the car, there's a conveyor belt, or like a rolling road, which moves those tires, creating the effect of the car being on a real racetrack. Now, you might think this all would be quite expensive, and it turns out you'd be right. It has been reported that F1 teams have spent somewhere between 50 and 100 million US dollars. That's between 40 and 80 million pounds to build them. And on top of that, they cost more money every time that they're used.
So to stop the teams learning too much from their wind tunnels, there are quite a few rules.
So many rules, but the most important ones are these. You're not allowed to use a real car or a full-size model. You have to use that small-scale model, 40% smaller than the real car. As Christian, you said, a dinky car.
The dinky car, yeah, the dinky car.
You're not allowed to run the air any faster than 110 miles per hour. I love how specific that is. Can you imagine standing in front of a fan at 110 miles? We'd be gone. We'd be done.
And also 111 miles per hour would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? So thank goodness it's 110.
Very against the rules. And the amount of time you're allowed to spend using your wind tunnel is restricted. We'll talk more about that later.
Okay, that's what a wind tunnel is. Next, a quick guide to a few wind tunnel words you need to know.
Aerodynamic force.
Wind tunnels are all about simulating F1 cars moving at high speeds. As the wind blasts past the model car, the airspeed and air resistance can lift the car up slightly or push it down to the ground or even affect its drag as it cuts through the air. That's basically what engineers mean when they're talking about aerodynamic force. And similarly,
flow structures.
When you hear that, it's all about what the car does to the air, how the airflow changes when it hits the front wing, the tires, that sort of thing.
CFD.
Short for computational fluid dynamics. It's a tool used by F1 designers that uses complex maths and simulation to predict the aerodynamic airflow.
points of downforce.
Now, we know downforce pushes the car into the track, helping it gain grip in the corners. Well, F1 teams measure the downforce in points. 1 point would give the car a tiny bit more downforce. 100 points is a lot more downforce. And finally,
runs.
We're not talking about going for a jog or cricket here. Teams are only allowed to spend a certain amount of time in the wind tunnel. This time is usually broken up into, quote, runs. Every time the wind tunnel is turned on and the wind rises above a certain speed, that counts as one run. Every run creates tons of data for the team to analyze and learn from.
Excellent job, Katie Osborne. Excellent jargon busting. So armed with that new knowledge, let's welcome back to Formula Y Alpine's technical director and regular wind tunnel dweller, Matt Harmon.
It's good to be back.
It's lovely to have you back. Now, right, Matt, let's go right back to basics with the world of wind tunnels. What exactly is a wind tunnel?
Well, a wind tunnel is a device that that houses a scale model of our race car and allows us to pass air across it to try and resolve basically how much aerodynamic force we can put onto our race car to try and understand how the car behaves aerodynamically in lots of different attitudes.
You talk about the scale model of the car and the wind passing through it. Going back a step further, why is wind so important in Formula One? Or more importantly, where that air goes when the car is passing through it? What if you're new to Formula One, just explain why that's so important.
Yeah, I mean that's a big part of what we do in the aerodynamics domain. You know, we're looking at managing these airflows through the car. You know, it's all about trying to manage what we call the flow structures through the car as they pass over the front wing, through the front suspension. Some of it finds its way into our cooling system and through cooling our radiators to keep our power unit and our powertrain systems cool. Some of it then finds its way around the bodywork and under the floor. And then over the rear wing. And it's very, very interesting, you know, when you look at what we've been trying to, or what F1 has been trying to do with the 2022 regulations and then on to the 2023, there's an awful lot of weight management at the rear of the car. There's an awful lot of lift, lifting of the air as it leaves the rear wing and leaving quite a large hole behind. And I think that's quite interesting to see. But it's really about just trying to manage all of those areas and try and visualize them. So in the wind tunnel, we have some very exciting tools that we use that allow us to actually visualize that airflow as it goes through and analyze it and compare it in CFD. After that, when we've done all that work, we go to the circuit and we measure hundreds of pressures on the car during a race weekend, and we try and tie that correlation to the CFD into the wind tunnel. And none of them are exact. None of them are super precise. It's all about taking directions and understanding some of those trends, really.
Because fundamentally, the more efficiently your car cuts through the air, the lower the lap times, the quicker the car goes. Am I right?
That's right, yeah.
And I guess that is why wind tunnels are so important for the teams, because we spoke in a previous podcast about the importance of simulators given Formula One's lack of testing nowadays. There's a lot less testing in modern day Formula One than there used to be for all sorts of reasons, largely to cut costs to make the sport more affordable. But if you're simulating where this wind goes in a wind tunnel, that's much more efficient way of doing it than going out and practicing on track.
Absolutely. And it's an experimental tool. It allows you to measure very, very, very small changes in systems. And, you know, we call them points of downforce. We're able to evaluate very, very low numbers of points of downforce because this is a game of marginal gains. You know, we need to make sure that we accumulate gains every week on the car in terms of its aerodynamic performance. And those gains sometimes come in big chunks and sometimes come in very small chunks. And without an experimental tool where you can measure down to sub-levels of points, it's very difficult to accumulate those marginal gains. And that's why the experimental tool of a wind tunnel is so important to us.
Now, not every F1 team has their own wind tunnel. Some have to pay another team to use theirs. At Alpine, you guys have your own in the factory. I'm guessing that's an advantage for Alpine, am I right?
Yes, it's an advantage for us. It's an advantage for us on a number of reasons. It allows us to develop our tunnel to our own specification. It allows us to develop tools inside it that allow us to visualise those flows and those pressures and actually work on the efficiency of our wind tunnel itself. You know we are limited on the runs we can do. It's very, very important that when we do a run in the tunnel that we accumulate excellent data. We don't want to repeat runs. Because if you use a run and waste it, that's a run you won't get back. So it's really, really important that we develop the tunnel as well as the car within it And that's something that we've always been very strong here at Alpine to ensure that we invest in those tools. And we have a very very good aerodynamic science team who are always looking at advancements in that area and what new technologies are in the field.
And I've heard a couple of teams, particularly, I believe off the top of my head, Aston Martin and McLaren, talk about new wind tunnels a lot. Explain the importance of that. I'm guessing that the more money you can put into a wind tunnel, the higher the technology and the more accurate it is compared to correlating on the track. Am I right with that assumption, or is that not how it works?
I think there are some aspects to that. I think the aspect ratio of the tunnel is really, really important depending on what car regulations you're working to. So, you know, the actual width and height of your tunnel is quite important. Definitely the case is, as advancements in measurement technology move forward, you need to make sure that you keep up with that. You don't necessarily need to have a new tunnel for that. You can upgrade your tunnel to those new measurement technologies, which we do. Also, the motion of the tunnel is quite important. You know, how accurately you can control the motion of the model, so that you can ensure that when you have it in a particular position, it is always consistently in that position and measuring accurately. So I think there are always benefits to having new equipment, because at that moment in time, you would like to think you'd got the best on the market. But as long as you keep up with the pace of what you have and you've got a very strong tunnel development program, I think you can mitigate a lot of those gains.
Because when we hear drivers and engineers talking about like correlation or problems with correlation between the track and the wind tunnel, I'm guessing for people like yourself, there's a constant battle to make sure that the wind tunnel is accurate compared, you know, the car wind tunnel compared to the actual car on track.
Absolutely. You know, it's really, really important that we're always checking that correlation, and we have a team of engineers that is their sole purpose to manage those correlations, to tie the work done at the circuit with the CFD development task, but on top of that, the wind tunnel task. So they try and pull all that data together and are often cross-plotting and analysing that data. And as I said to you earlier, they're not all completely precise. So they're not all completely accurate in the way in which we go about testing them. So there always are assumptions and corrections that we have to apply. But, you know, if you take our development path last year in Alpine, we were very confident in our correlation, and we turned that into a very strong development program over the season, where we took an awful lot of upgrades straight to the circuit that delivered as per the simulation and performance estimations, which is good.
So you guys are measuring wind passing over and passing through a car, and you've got a model of a car sat in this tunnel. That's the wind tunnel.
That's right. It's a smaller version of the car. In years gone by, we would have put a full-size car in a tunnel, in some tunnels. But now that is a model-scale car, and the model quality, it just keeps getting better and better. In fact, I was in Aero yesterday, and just looking at the quality of the model that we're currently running at the moment and the mechanisms that we have inside it, to allow it to extract the data, it's as impressive as the race car in some respects.
And not strictly a question that's needed for the podcast, but can I come and have a look? Because that sounds fascinating.
You can come and have a look as long as you bring your blindfold with you. It's absolutely fine.
Oh, that's not fun, is it? Listen, it was worth a try. There'll be a lot of people listening to this thinking that we're in the age of computers, right? And everything is done on computers. Why does this still need to be an actual model of a car in a wind tunnel rather than a clever computer simulation that does it for you? Because I would guess that some people might think that's where it would go in the modern era.
Yeah, I think we get closer and closer to that, but there is always a need to validate and correlate your data, to have some ability to just check those discrepancies of your simulation tools. And I think that's why there will always be a place for some level of testing in terms of wind tunnels or simulators, or indeed testing of the real vehicle at the circuit.
It's a funny old sport, isn't it? Like, it's mad, but brilliant. Like, it's someone's job to put a small model car and make wind pass through it and make that all work. That's someone's job. You just don't think about these things when you're watching lap 34 of the Canadian Grand Prix, do you? It's just mad.
It's always very nice. It's always very nice when you bring somebody for a tour and you take them to the wind tunnel and they see the model and they had absolutely no idea that we went to that level to achieve what we do in terms of performance, that we actually run a scale model of our race car that looks exactly like the race car to allow us to develop it. And I think that's always a nice thing. I think you can get used to these. You can get used to it because you're always around it. But I don't think people really do realise how much effort goes into the bother sort of nearly on 1,000 people that are working in the team here and stuff.
Do you put stickers on the model car and sponsors, or is it just based? How much level of detail does Formula One go to?
The aerodynamicists don't like stickers because they trip the edges and make us go slower.
Yeah, I get that.
So we have to do a very, very good job of painting the car, very high quality. That's one of our big focuses.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We're hearing a lot in the 2023 season about cost caps and restrictions on wind tunnel time. Now, nowadays, the Formula One rules say that the teams who finish lower down the Constructors' Championship are allowed to spend longer in the wind tunnel. It's all about Formula One's aim to sort of close the pack up and make the racing closer. A couple of questions. A, why is that important? And B, and this is the one I'm most interested in, how's that police? Because I'm imagining it's like, you know, when you see Guinness World Records broken on the telly, is there a stern man with a clipboard or a sort of head teacher-like looking woman in the corner with a clipboard and a stopwatch, making sure you don't spend too long?
Good questions. So in terms of the requirement for the correction in the amount of wind tunnel time, I think it's an interesting and quite an important philosophy that has been adopted there by F1 and the FIA, because in the end of the day, we achieve an amount of aerodynamic load week by week. Every single week we run, every single week we produce some performance, we put it on the car. It's very, very difficult with everybody with similar tools and similar levels of staffing and financial investment and everything else, that if you are behind, to catch up without some level of correction. There is always the ability to come up with those new ideas and those sorts of things. But it's an interesting concept to allow us to speed up that process of convergence between the cars. So I think it works. I think we need more time to watch that and see it over the full regulation of 22, 23, 24, 25. But I do believe in it as a philosophy, and I do believe it will allow some convergence of the race cars. In terms of how it's looked after, I mean, it's policed by the FIA, and they do a great job of that. We have various systems that they will come and inspect and look at in terms of what we're doing. There are CCTV cameras in our tunnel, so they have access to those.
Wow!
So, you know, in the end, it's very much first order our responsibility as good people to run to the rules and to do the right thing, but there is also some auditing that happens of that process, and that auditing is conducted by the FIA, and they do an excellent job of that.
I'm fascinated by, like, cameras watching. It's like Big Brother's watching you. It is
Big Brother, yes.
This is Big Brother. Matt, I get an awful lot from you when you come on this podcast. I am fascinated by your insight. I think the biggest thing you've taught me this time is that I really want to go and see inside a wind tunnel. That's what's gonna stick with me.
Well, you've asked twice now, so I'm gonna have to accept, aren't I?
Yeah, there you go. It's on record. We'll pass it. Katie Osborne will regret missing this interview. She really will. And silly question of the day. Presumably there's no mucking about with it, because you must be able to do a lot with a wind tunnel, getting blown about and that sort of thing, even at end of season at Christmas. Is there any messing about with the wind tunnel, or is that strictly not a thing?
It's strictly not a thing. Interestingly, in a previous life, I did run a test in a wind tunnel with somebody actually sat in the car, and one of the things that we had to be very careful was the helmet lift.
Yes.
Because if you get that wrong, you can end up seriously harming the person in the car. So, you know, I think we don't muck around with these things. And to be quite honest, we're always very, very wary of damaging the tunnel, because if we damage the tunnel, our points a week becomes a big problem for us. So we treat it very carefully. Let's put it that way.
Wouldn't go down well with Otmar, would it? The Alpine team principal.
Not at all, no.
Matt, such a pleasure having you on. Please come back and see us again, because, as I say, we love talking to you on Formula Y.
My pleasure. Nice to speak to you.
Yeah, that was a stellar job, Christian, from both you and Matt there. So much fascinating insight on wind tunnels. Now, you know what I particularly enjoyed was that info on how the FIA, the sport's governing body, keeps an eye on teams to make sure they don't spend more than their allocated time in the wind tunnel. That was super fascinating for sure. Now, you guys also mentioned the new sliding scale of aerodynamic development. Christian, pretty certain that we should explain a little bit more about how that works.
Yeah, put simply, the higher you are in the Constructors or the Teams Championship, the less wind tunnel time you get. So for the start of the 2023 season, the team that finished last in the table in 2022, which was Williams, got to spend the most time in the wind tunnel improving their car. And Red Bull, who won, got the least amount of time. But from the 30th of June 2023, that all changed. It was reset based on the Constructors' Championship at that point.
So what you're saying is, in turn, this is going to affect teams with their development of this year's car, as it relates to the upgrades in the second half of the season and so on, but also how much early work they get to do on next year's car.
Absolutely. So AlphaTauri were last in the championship on June the 30th. So until the end of the year, they get the most time. Red Bull get the least. And not just because they're winning, as we just mentioned, but also because they have another 10% shaved off their development time for breaking Formula One's cost cap in 2022. And the wind tunnel time allocations reset at the end of each season and then halfway through the season once again.
So the big questions here are, will the sliding scale make the racing closer in F1? Will the big teams like Red Bull start to get caught by the rest of the pack? We ask former head of strategy at Aston Martin and friend of Formula Y, Bernie Collins.
It will, I think, going forward mean that teams like the Red Bull era we have, they've now won two championships in a row, likely to be a third this year. We should see the pack close up more quickly than we have done in the past.
Then there's McLaren, who opened a brand new wind tunnel in the middle of 2023. And Aston Martin, they're finally getting their own wind tunnel in their new factory. Bernie says it's much better for teams to have their own tunnels.
Oh, it's so important, because just having a wind tunnel on site where the aerodynamic guys can go and look physically at the wind tunnel, see what's working, see why it's not working, quickly turn around parts that they can go on the car and do a test, and you're not having to, you know, a lot of the teams use the old Toyota tunnel in Cologne, but you were shipping parts out there, waiting for results, getting them back. So it creates this massive delay in your production of wind tunnel components. So I think anything that you can have on site, as well as that, you control it. So you know when the calibrations were last done, you know when the rolling road was last updated. It's good to just have your own people on site working on your own, that you'll get much, much stronger results that way. So I think it's really crucially important. You know, there's a funny story from years ago at McLaren when we were using the Toyota wind tunnel, where a van drove one of the models to Toyota, and when it got there, I realised the model wasn't in the back of the van. But it's wasted like half a day going to Germany to do the wind tunnel test, and then it's not happening. So all of these little things can be avoided just by having a wind tunnel on site.
As ever, we do appreciate the wisdom of Bernie Collins. Well, folks, we hope that's answered your questions on all things wind tunnels. If not, feel free to fire more questions at us. No matter how big or small, email us at whyw@f1.com. And remember, you can always make it a voice note as well, just in case you want to get on the podcast.
And let us know what you think of the show too, because we love to read them out. We are delighted to say that hundreds of thousands of you are listening all over the world, which is brilliantly mad, isn't it, Katie?
Yeah, that's wild. Meg Foster from Australia says that, "I absolutely love your podcast, Katie and Christian. I am learning so much about the sport every week as a newbie. Thank you so much."
You are very welcome, Meg. I want to come to Melbourne to see you next year. Heather in Indiana says, "Thanks so much for adding this podcast to the F1 family. As a born and bred Hoosier, I'm a massive IndyCar fan."
So am I. Yes, Heather.
I knew Katie would pipe up at that moment. I just knew it.
Hoosiers for life.
Thanks, Katie. Quite enough from you. Heather says, "I've just started following F1 in the past three seasons. I find this podcast helps me to understand more of the science and strategy behind the sport, increasing my enjoyment of watching the race weekends." You are very welcome, Heather.
Heather, next time I'm in Indiana, I'm giving you a wave. Nick in New York says, "I love the podcast and a huge fan of the engineering and logistics behind the F1 races we all watch."
And a special hello to Craig Claggett from Elkridge, Maryland in the USA. He says, "I started following Formula One in 1963 when I was 13 years old by reading race reports in Road and Track magazine. I then attended every US Grand Prix at Watkins Glen until they stopped racing there. Katie, ever been there?
I sure have. Great track.
I thought you'd have been there.
Down the street and around the corner of where I live now.
Excellent. My first favourite F1 drivers were Jim Clark, Graham Hill and Sir Jackie Stewart. Following the sport for 60 years, I thought I was a fairly informed fan, but I learned so much from your episode about simulators, the capabilities of the astounding technology and how the teams use it, including real time during race weekends, was enlightening. I had no idea. Now I better understand why a two-car race team might need 1,000 employees and why Lewis Hamilton always thanks the people back in the factory for his race interviews. Oh, Katie, I loved that. Watching for 60 years and we're still teaching him things.
Love that. Thank you, Craig, for sending that in. Well, Christian, before we go, just a friendly reminder to subscribe to this feed. And if you can leave us a positive review, we'd really appreciate it as well. And don't forget to check out F1.com for all of the latest news from the world of Formula One, plus links to all of F1's other amazing content. There's F1 TV, our other podcasts, F1 Nation and Beyond the Grid, and so much for you to read about this amazing sport. Me and Christian will be back next week. Talk to you then. Bye for now.